This is the Airplane Geeks Podcast. Our aim is to educate and inform you, explore and expand your passion for aviation, and entertain you a little along the way. This episode, our guests are the two brothers who create the very popular Chicken Wings aviation comics. We also have a report on flying a full-motion flight simulator at the United Airlines Flight Training Center in Denver from 10-year-old listener Jackson. In the news, we look at the effects on aviation of the now-concluded partial U.S. government shutdown, and if we'll see anything different if it happens again. Also, the Airlander 10 prototype is retired to be followed by development of a production model. Two KC-46A tankers are delivered, and the Russians seem to be integrating unmanned wingmen with Sukhoi Su-57 fighters. It's all coming up right now. Welcome to the Airplane Geeks Podcast. This is episode 537 of the show where we talk aviation. I'm Max Flight, and joining me is first David Vanderhoof, our aviation historian. Hey, David.
And tanker fanatic. this is going to be a very lighthearted show. I'm looking forward to tonight. I went out and had some barbecue wings just on behalf of the show for dinner. So looking forward to lots of conversations and laughs.
Here we go. Also to help us with that is our Airplane Geeks reporter at large, Launchpad Marzari.
Greetings from deep in the heart of. Doing well.
Very good. Now, Max Trescott is off this episode.
Slacker.
Yeah, he's got himself all tuckered out, I guess, so we hope he's getting a lot of good rest, and we look for him to rejoin us next week. Well, our guests this episode are Stefan Strasser and Mike Strasser, the pair behind the Chicken Wings comics. Their website is chickenwingscomics.com, and you've no doubt seen their work. It's comics for av geeks. Well, Mike is an experienced helicopter pilot. He lives in Las Vegas, Nevada. He has many years of experience in aviation as a commercial pilot, an aircraft mechanic, and a flight instructor. Most recently, Mike fights forest fires flying CH-47 Chinook helicopters. Mike, welcome to the Airplane Geeks Podcast.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me.
All right. And Stefan, he lives and works near Vienna, Austria. He's an accomplished cartoon artist and an independent illustrator. He actually has a master's degree in international trade, but instead of finding a real job, Stefan decided to become a freelance artist. And Chicken Wings is his most important project, but you can find his work in many other magazines and books and newsletters all around the world. Stefan, we're happy to have you on the show. Are you Skyping in from Austria?
Yes, I am. Thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for staying up so late.
Well, I didn't stay up. Actually, I got up, but I'm used to that.
Oh, you woke up for this, huh? Well, that's pretty good.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
All right.
That's contradictory to most people. Usually, they fall asleep in the middle of it.
Yeah. Not wake up for it.
I'll try my best. Yeah.
All right, great. Also, this episode, we have an additional special guest. Jackson is a flight sim enthusiast. He wrote us a few weeks ago saying that he's a fan of the podcast. He also told us that he'd be going to the United Airlines Flight Training Center in Denver to fly a full-motion simulator. Oh, and Jackson is 10 years old. Hello, Jackson. Thanks for coming on Airplane Geeks.
Hello, everyone.
Well, we're going to start right off this episode with Jackson, and then we'll get into our other segments. So, Jackson, let's start off and talk about your flight simming at home. Primarily, you fly X-Plane, is that right?
Yes, you're correct.
And how did you get interested in flight sims?
Well, mainly it's because, I wanted to know how, what all the buttons do in airplanes and,
Are airplanes something that you've been interested in for a while?
Yes. Yes, I liked airplanes since I was born.
Since the very beginning, huh?
Yeah, my first flight was on a United 757 from Denver to somewhere in Mexico, Cancun, I think.
Yeah, and you thought that was pretty exciting, huh?
Yeah, it was pretty long, though.
It is a long flight. Well, at home on X-Plane, which aircraft do you like to fly?
Mainly the 747 and 737, sometimes the MD-82.
Yeah. Do you have a favorite amongst those?
Yes, the Boeing 737-800.
Yeah, the 800, huh? So tell us, how did you get invited to the United Flight Training Center?
Well, my parents had a connection with one of the people who worked there, and my parents assumed that I should go.
Yeah, I think that was probably a good idea, huh?
Yes, it was.
Now, this is the new flight training center in Denver, I guess, or at least it's newly renovated and unveiled last year in 2018, in October, I think. I understand they have more than 30 full flight simulators there, and they use this facility for new and recurrent training, not only for United pilots, but also pilots from other airlines and government agencies as well. And I also understand they do some emergency training there for flight attendants and maintenance technicians as well. So, Jackson, tell us about the flight training center. What happened when you arrived?
So as soon as I arrived, my parents went up to the, we went inside, giant glass window. We went in.
Yeah.
And my parents talked to this, the person who was at the front desk. And after that, we sat down in the little lounge for a little while until this guy named Mike came out and we took a walk over to the sim.
And did you have to get badges and identification, things like that?
No, not at all.
Okay, so you just got right in. And so they took you over to one of the simulators first? That's where you started? Is that right?
Yes, a Boeing 757-200 full motion simulator.
And what did you do when you got there?
We sat down in this room where they did all the flight preparation and told us, like, how to operate the main screen you see to follow the flight director and stuff.
Uh-huh.
And then after that, we went into the sim.
And how does it look on the inside, just like the real plane?
Yes, it looks exactly like the real plane.
And this is a full-motion simulator, right? So you're enclosed in this cockpit that's going to move around when you're flying?
Yes, I am. I did not get sick, though.
Well, that's good. I'm sure the folks at United were happy that you didn't get sick as well.
Yeah, they probably didn't want me to puke all over the yoke.
Probably not. Now, so tell us about flying it. Did you do the startup?
Yes, I did. I pressed in on each engine switch and turned it left.
Okay.
And that starts the engines.
Did you know to do that from flight simming at home or because they had to tell you to do that?
No, from the flight simming at home, I knew.
Yeah, you knew how to start up the engines without any help, right?
Yeah.
Cool.
It was kind of like a mix between the 747 and the 737.
Okay. So after you got the engines fired up, what happened next?
I just sat there for a little bit. They started typing in the route, which was from KSFO to I'm not sure where.
Okay.
And we basically from KSFO to KSFO.
Okay.
And then after that, they typed in all the things into the flight computer.
Right.
After they typed it all into the flight simulator, we pushed back. And we took a pushback, turned right, and then when I started using the thing that directs the front wheel, it was very challenging.
Yeah, did you have trouble keeping the plane where you wanted it on the runway or on the taxiway there?
Yes, it was challenging. Yes, very challenging.
All right. How about the takeoff roll?
So for the takeoff roll, we throttled the engines up to about 50%.
Mm-hmm.
After we hit about 50 knots, we throttled them up to about 100%.
Okay.
And then at around 180 or so knots, we pulled back. And we flew up until we hit 10,000 feet, I think.
Okay.
And once at 10,000 feet, we turned around and started doing some fun stuff around San Francisco.
Yeah, like what kind of fun stuff?
Well, we took a little dive and did a barrel roll.
You did a barrel roll, huh?
Yeah, and after that...
Was that your idea?
Yes, it was.
So they weren't expecting you to do a barrel roll, huh?
No.
What did they think when you did the barrel roll?
They were surprised. I was also surprised because that plane is so agile and it's so big.
Hmm.
And after that, we took a dive and buzzed Alcatraz.
Nice.
And then after that, we flew under the Golden Gate Bridge.
Yeah. Was that a surprise for your United hosts as well?
No, it was their idea.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, my first officer was the one doing most of the flying under the bridges. And at one point, we were 4 feet above the water.
Wow.
Yeah, and then we pulled back up, almost vertical, and then did a loop-de-loop.
Jackson, I think you are being used as an excuse to have some additional fun that they can't normally do in the sim.
I'm thinking the same thing.
I believe so.
Hey, Jackson, this is Launchpad. Since you were pilot in command, was your co-pilot doing all the call-outs for you where he'd say rotate and gear up and all
yes,
those commands?
Yes, he was.
How cool was that, was having him doing that for you?
Yeah, it's cool. I liked it.
So how did it compare to doing it on your computer compared to being in the full motion simulator?
What'd you think? A lot different because on the computer I'm used to using like a mouse and keyboard to fly a plane, but this time I was using my hands to fly the whole thing, and the fact that it rolled and all.
Yeah,
because it's not like you roll when you're using a mouse. Your house doesn't just flip over.
Sure. And how was your landing? Did you stick the landing?
It was butter.
It was butter. Okay. Well, you've had a lot of practice with it, right?
Yes, I did.
Yeah.
And Jackson, you're in the real simulator, so like when they put down the gears and the flap, you could hear the different noises, right?
Yeah. It makes a bunch of whirring noises.
Very cool. Jackson, what do you think was the best part of your visit?
Definitely the part where we're like, at the end where we almost landed, my favorite part was... the guy behind us controlling the sim and everything.
Mm-hmm.
He started playing the music from Airplane and turned off the runway lights. And then he turned them on again.
I think David's right. I think these guys were taking advantage of an opportunity to have more fun than they might otherwise have. That's good.
Yeah.
So it sounds like it was a really, really wonderful experience, Jackson. Do you think, do you agree with that?
Yes, it was.
Yeah. Where do you think you'll go for a career or, you know, when you grow up, what do you think you'll be doing? Any ideas now? I know it's awfully early at just age 10 to be thinking about what you might want to be when you grow up. But do you have any thoughts?
I 100% want to be a pilot.
Yeah? A particular kind, a commercial pilot?
Yeah, I want to be a commercial pilot and have a private pilot's license to go around in my own airplane.
Yeah.
Helicopter firefighter?
All right. Well, that's pretty exciting, Jackson. I really want to thank you for getting in contact with us, letting us know that you were going to have this little adventure and for agreeing to come on the show and telling us a little bit about the experience. I think this is probably... something that not every young person who's enthusiastic about flying would have an opportunity to do. So you must feel very lucky.
Yes, I do.
Hey, Jackson.
Yeah?
This is Launchpad. The next thing you've got to do, and this is a blatant plug, is through Max, I'll send you the addresses and get you in contact, your local EAA chapter, Experimental Aircraft Association, has a program called Young Eagles, where you can go take your first flight in a small aircraft for free. You'll get a logbook, and they'll start you, and it includes, if you complete the flight, the logbook has coupons in it, so you can actually download your first flight lesson for free.
Wow, that's a great idea.
Yeah.
That's the EAA Young Eagle, and that goes for everybody within the sound of our voice. We run that all summer.
Yeah, I got sent a link by one of you who sent me the program.
Very good. So we've started already. That's fantastic. And yeah, Launchpad, you're pretty active in that program.
Yeah, as a president of the local chapter down here, we do three of those events a year, plus, you know, one offers. But we bring the young eagles in, we run them through a ground school, and then we'll take them up for our first flight and let them and they're going to, and in the case of Jackson, it'll be old hand. We let him manipulate the controls and really fly the aircraft. And as we like to say, this isn't simulation, this is stimulation.
Very good. All right.
Max, can we ask Jackson a favor?
Of course.
Jackson, what's your favorite podcast?
Probably the Airplane Geeks podcast.
Okay. Now, here's what I want you to do. I want you to say, "Hi, I'm Jackson, and you're listening to my favorite podcast, The Airplane Geeks."
Hi, I'm Jackson, and you're listening to my favorite podcast, The Airplane Geeks podcast.
All right, we can use that in the future as a little bumper.
I like that.
Yeah, that's good.
I like that.
Good stuff.
All right, let's go on to the news. Is everyone ready?
Ready.
Ready deep in the heart of.
Ready.
Right in Vegas.
All right, let's kick off the news. A little discussion about the partial shutdown of the U.S. government. It's now over, at least for 3 weeks. Just before the shutdown ended, there were a lot of news stories about the effects of the shutdown. Now, we're not going to get into the political aspects of this, but we want to kind of focus on the impacts to aviation. We saw several of them. We've talked about them for the last couple of episodes. The TSA security agents, the air traffic controllers. We were experiencing some increased call-in rates for being sick. Some FAA services were cut back. Even some aviation accidents went uninvestigated by the NTSB because of the shutdown. I guess one question that may be worth talking about a little bit is this. Do you guys think that there are any things to be learned by this government shutdown experience, at least as it affects aviation? Do you think anything will be different if this happens again? Do you think there'll be any changes as a result of this? I don't know. What do you guys think?
Yes, I do think there will be a couple of changes. During the shutdown, I went and had my medical redone, and I was talking to my aeromedical examiner, and the effect being is since I passed, there was no problem because it was all the filing was automated, and it was good. But had there been a problem, it was like all stop until we could submit the paperwork to the FAA and then have the FAA's medical examiners look at it. So that was, you know, everything was running automated normally. But as soon as there was something that required extra work, that would have been all stop. And now they're having to deal with the backlog of everybody for the last 30 days. So I don't think the FAA's, along with all the other government agencies, is going to be full up and running for at least 3 weeks, because now they got to deal with, you know, they haven't been doing their jobs for 30 days. So they got 30 days worth of homework to do.
Yeah, it's a backlog, sure.
And I'll tell you something else I think is a secondary cause. If you remember way back in September, I think it was, the FAA hinted that there would be new LSA regulations upping the weight limit coming out the first of the year.
Right.
Something tells me that's been postponed because they weren't able to work on it or get the final rule proposal published. I don't think we're going to see that until Easter at the earliest, or maybe it's Sun and Fun.
But do you have the feeling that there are any corrections or any process changes that are going to be made to make these things less susceptible? Should we have another shutdown? I haven't seen anything that's changed.
Well, I don't think there will be any processes changed. I think what our dear leaders on both sides of the aisle and both sides of Pennsylvania Avenue have realized is how important to this country our aviation infrastructure is. Everybody knows I'm outside of Philadelphia, and it was one of the ones that went down last Friday. The amount of revenue and the amount of stress this country can take if for some reason we have to shut down the airlines is a bad thing. We were finally getting a backlog, getting caught up on the backlog of empty spots for air traffic control, but the FAA building went down for close to a month, so there aren't any new classes. You know, we've got people sick out, and you can't blame them, as well as the our TSA. I mean, the effects of not paying people is dramatic. And Max, it directly affected you. Max was going to the FAA symposium in Baltimore next month for the UAS, and that was supposed to be updated, and that got canceled and postponed. I'm not looking forward to the 15th because on the 13th, I'm flying to Hawaii, and Lord knows what happens when I get out there if they shut the government down again. The National Air and Space Museum lost all of their time, and all of those employees were furloughed, so no of the restorations besides the museums closed across the board. All of those important activities that they were doing to prep for the 50th anniversary of the Apollo missions went down the tubes, and they're just getting back to work today as we record this Monday. The scope of this, I mean, our aviation is such an important economic driver in this country. I don't think most people realize what kind of effect it has. And just taking out two variables like the TSA and air traffic control, God bless NACTA and the TSA, because they were the ones that got us back on track. Excuse the pun.
I think what we learned here was while some of us are not essential, like the essential people, the air traffic controllers, the TSA agents, but that when you shut down the bureaucrats behind the scenes for 3 days, okay, we'll absorb it. But starting to push 30 days of not having the bureaucratic machine behind it, and suddenly licenses are stopping, you know, all that stuff. I think who learned this was everyone else, that the FAA does more than just air traffic control.
Yeah, Mike or Stefan, do you think that us in the aviation industry are bound to be just simply victims when something like this happens? We just have to sort of passively accept something that's out of our control? Do you think that's the situation?
I'm just, it's such a big machine. I don't know what the average Joe pilot can do to fix any of this. I mean, we're definitely a victim. I mean, it affected us at my company because flights were getting delayed, connections to, we're working a contract in Chile right now. Connections didn't get made. We have a whole round of type rating check rides coming up. My flight instructor renewal wasn't getting done yet. There's revisions pending on our manuals. So, I mean, in the meantime, we're still got to be operating. So, I don't know how this in the long run, how that's gonna how that's going to work if they keep doing that. But it's definitely made an impact on civil aviation on the helicopter side for sure.
Yeah, I think like David pointed out, the implications of a government shutdown here in the United States really do extend out, touch a lot of aspects of aviation, of course, and as well as others, almost everything else as well. But maybe the best opportunity we have here as a result of this experience is maybe a greater awareness of the role that aviation plays in the economy of the country.
Yeah, awareness is probably the only... I mean, you affect aviation, you affect the whole world, right? If stops don't get made, layovers get delayed, cargo planes don't take off, that's going to affect more than just the States, right? So maybe the whole world may look into this. Not sure that's a good thing or not.
Yeah. Good point. All right, well, let's move on to a different kind of a topic. This is in CNN. World's biggest aircraft, Airlander 10, moves toward commercial model. The builder of the Airlander 10 hybrid air vehicles, they call it part airship, part helicopter, and part plane. Others just call it the flying bum, because that's kind of what it looks like from certain angles. But this prototype, Airlander 10, is a hybrid helium airship, a big one, 300 feet long. And you may recall from its second test flight, after about 90 minutes, I think, when it was attempting to land, it nosedived on landing, damaged the flight deck. There was a lot of press surrounding that. But now we see that the Airlander 10 prototype is being retired, going to be replaced by a production model, and they already have secured approval from the UK's CAA, the Civil Aviation Authority. The role for this, they see this as kind of a floating luxury liner in a sense. David, it looks beautiful when you look at the artist drawings of what the interior of this 150-foot-long cabin is supposed to look like. It looks pretty flashy, but probably something out of our price range.
Yeah, well, air travel is air travel. And personally, to be able to sort of recreate what it was like to fly on the Hindenburg, which was first class, and basically being able to see the seals and the dolphins flying slow and over the ocean, etc., or any Zeppelin from the 30s, that kind of experience. It's one of those once-in-a-lifetime things, you know. It's beautiful. It's open cockpit. You can fly with, you know, in the Hindenburg or the Graf Zeppelin. Quite often they flew with the windows open, and there was an outside smoking deck, you know. It could be a really neat experience for... Unfortunately, for those people who are not the unemployed people like me at the current time, but, you know, I might hit the lottery and be able to go for a ride.
What is the license you're going to need to fly this thing if it's part helicopter, part yeah. airship? You're going to have to hold three licenses?
No, it'll be licensed like the LZ-1 down in Friedrichshafen. And, in fact, that'll be the economic model for it. The license will be purely a light airship. The difference being is that you can rotate the gondola, or not the gondolas, the nacelles rotate to be 90 degrees, so you can use them as pure lift vector.
And I think this does not moor to a mast. I think this actually lands on the ground. There are a number of different kind of sections to this this airship, but it includes two... kind of lateral, I don't know exactly what you call them.
Ballonets.
Is that what you call them?
Yep.
If it was a float plane, it'd be the floats.
Oh, I see. You're talking the bottom parts. I was talking the envelopes with the gas as the ballonets.
Oh, okay. No. And I understand that this has no internal structure. The shape is maintained by the pressure of the gas, the helium inside.
Yes, and that's my... Yeah, it's truly not a Zeppelin because it doesn't have it has only a semi-rigid frame. And if you look at the Air 10, when it crashed, it deflated And it was like, oh, it really does. It really is a blimp, as we would call it, or a dirigible, or not a dirigible, a blimp, because it doesn't have a frame in it. I hope they make it, because I just think it's cool. But I'm scared their economic model isn't going to work, because just like the Zeppelins down in Zeppelin Corporation is running one down in Friedrichshafen, which is purely tourism like this. You get to go for a ride over the Bodensee. And our good friends at Goodyear flying Wingship, what is it, Wingship 1 or Wingship 1, is they have to run away from the weather. And I'm scared this thing without a mooring pole is going to, or mooring mask, is going to be having the weather chase it all over the place. And therefore, booking flights on it will be difficult. But I really hope they can figure out how to make that work, because I think it's just a cool ship.
It is cool. And they have plans for a larger one, the Airlander 50. They say that that will be used as a cargo kind of ship. It'll carry over 50 tons of cargo, cargo bay volume of over 500 cubic meters. And again, focused on cargo and the heavy lift market. Another aspect of this kind of design is that these things can travel point to point, and they don't need any real infrastructure. So that makes it ideal for an aircraft that can land in remote locations for purposes like mining or oil and gas exploration or even humanitarian relief. So that's something that's coming, the Airlander 50. And I think both of these are looking for something in the mid early to mid-2020s.
The Airlander 50 has a viable economic model because, as you said, mining, think everywhere you, if you've ever watched Ice Road Truckers, because come the summer, it's just the opposite. When the ice roads thaw, these places are isolated. And the opposite being is that an Airlander 50 is hauling the equivalent of about 5 to 10 semi-trucks worth of equipment. And it could just float right up there. And that's the economic model for it.
All right. Well, speaking about economic models, of course, when you develop an aircraft, you want to get them out there delivered to your customers. You want your customers to accept delivery and make payment. And we have an item in GeekWire. This is Boeing hands Air Force the keys to not just one, but two KC-46 tanker jets. Now, this was kind of fun, David. At the handover ceremony at the Everett, Washington assembly plant, Boeing surprised their own employees with one more KC-46 than they had been expecting, didn't they?
Yeah, it was sort of like Oprah Winfrey, you know. You get a tanker and you get a tanker. they actually delivered two, and actually they are now officially delivered to McConnell Air Force Base, which is the first operational base for the KC-46. That being said, and because I am the tanker expert, everybody points that out to me on a regular basis.
Yeah, you have no choice in this matter, David.
I have no choice in this matter. If it wasn't for tankers, I wouldn't be on this show. Jackson, just so you know, never become a subject matter on anything, because you get sucked into 10 years of doing podcasting, just so you know. But that being said, there's still problems. They are having problems with the camera system to the booms, as well as the central drogue that comes out from beyond has a way of separating from the fuselage. The pod drogues are fine out on the wingtips, but the center drogue, which is designed for larger aircraft that use probe and drogue, pick some of the larger aircraft like C-130s that in European service, etc., they're having issues. But that being said, the Air Force now is the proud owner of two KC-46s with more on the way. So the trials and tribulations of this program will continue, but I think we're well on our way to getting it figured out. And 200 years from now, when they finally retire the last KC-135 and pick them up in a KC-46, we'll be good. So
I'm optimistic about that, but it is nice to know that they're actually now delivered, at least two of them. And Boeing being a little pretentious about delivering two on this as a surprise was also nice. And some of the shots that you can see if you go out on the internet, the Secretary of the Air Force got to go for a flight, and you actually get to see photographs of the cockpit. It is kind of nice to see a really nice big glass cockpit for these folks. We just need to get the back end working right with that nice glass cockpit. And at this point, I'd like to give a shout out now that they're delivered. If there is a tanker squadron out there that flies either KC-10s or KC-135s, and they need luggage to go in the back to take pictures, while you can still do that not through a video screen, I'll be happy to volunteer on a regular basis, but I'll leave that pitch alone. But Max, should we go off to the next subject?
Yeah, Russian fighter pilots and unmanned combat vehicles. This came up in our Slack listener team. I think Ken was talking about this. What's the story here, David?
Well, the Russian MiG Corporation, Mikoyan Corporation, delivered their first UCAV, or unmanned combat air vehicle, which looks a lot like an American unmanned aerial vehicle. It's a flying wing, but it definitely has a Russian flair to it. If you look at the engines, they're not very infrared sound, and there's a lot of bumps and bulges. It definitely looks Russian. But what the Mikoyan company is saying is they'd like the Sukhoi pilots to use them as wingman, which is something we've talked a little bit about, Max, on UAV Digest. The idea is the UCAVs are force multipliers. You have a manned aircraft that leads a two or three unmanned aerial aircraft to direct targets. And what people are concerned about is these vehicles are AI or artificial intelligence. I think what the underlying article was saying was the Russians tend to be a little reckless. We see it on a regular basis. Anytime somebody intercepts a aircraft over the North Sea, they're getting kind of reckless. They're wondering if the pilots are going to be reckless and the UCAVs are going to follow suit and be even more dangerous. But it's going to be a force multiplier, and the Air Force has been toying with it, and the Navy's been toying with it. The Navy converted their unmanned combat aerial vehicle into a tanker. So that's how that dovetails into the previous story. We're still talking about tankers. But in all, autonomous vehicles or AI-driven vehicles are going to be a unique aspect. And then you're getting to all sorts of political challenges about using drones that think for themselves. Do they actually, what happens if they hit civilians, or what happens this, or does a pilot flying an Su-27 who's also in charge of two other drones, one on each wing, does he have the mental capacity to control all three aircraft? So interesting technology, and I'm sure we'll be following it more on that other show, the UAV Digest.
Again, we're speaking with Stefan and Mike Strasser. We all love chicken wings. They're hysterical. Sometimes they're kind of inside jokes. If you're into aviation, you know what the joke is. Maybe others won't get the joke. But I guess we have to kind of start at the beginning and ask, why chickens?
First of all, thanks for the kudos. We appreciate it. The chickens came, basically it was an idea, you know, working on a small airport pretty much my whole life, and us being around aviation since we saw our first air show. I've always told the no joke, here I was upside down with the long line on, flying through the snow kind of stories. And then my brother has always drawn cartoons his whole life. So the thought came to us suddenly, surprisingly late actually, but suddenly, that why don't we make a cartoon about, you know, flying, because we haven't you know, is there anything like that out there? So there wasn't really much out there. Not that we cared. We had a bunch of ideas, and initially my brother drew little people, cartoon people, but at some point, so we came up with a pilot, a typical pilot, right? And big mouth and big watch and sunglasses and the typical mechanic. And then after they're all drawn up, the thought came, if you guys remember the show Wings, we didn't want to have this. We don't want anybody to say this is a knockoff of the TV show Wings. And when the name Wings fell, then somehow, and that's a little foggy, but somehow the name Chicken Wings came up. And then we started drawing this with birds. It's at first they were supposed to be exotic birds, but you know, everybody can relate to a chicken, right? And a chicken is a flightless bird, and we thought, and plus the double innuendo, you know, just once we had the name, it just started snowballing from there.
So how long ago did all of this start? And when it did start, did you envision some kind of an ongoing enterprise here? Or did you think it'd be just maybe one or two comics and that would be it?
You know, we didn't envision anything. We this was mostly fan-based driven. We had a couple cartoons around the office that were passing around, and people picked it up and said, "This is awesome. You guys need to make a book." And then you guys need to have those actual pre-websites. Really, our first website was rudimentary. I think just a drawing of an airport with a couple chickens on it. So
yeah, it was years later, actually.
It was years later, yeah. So it was office card. So if you look at the first book, they're very, very aviation specific, more so than the later books, because it was something I passed around the office at the flight school. And then we got talked into all these things, you know. Of course, we had grand visions of being famous overnight in the next Simpsons. That hasn't happened yet, but we're still working on that. So
I distinctly remember the point where we had like 10 or 20 ideas drawn out, and then thinking, crap, we're out of ideas. What are we going to do now? Yeah.
Now what?
Yeah. Now what? Yeah.
Now you two are geographically separated now. When you were beginning this, was that the case then as well, or were you guys closer together?
We were always, ever since we finished school, we're always geographically separated, but you know, we kept in touch, and Chicken Wings was actually invented at our mom's birthday party, a late night thing after everybody went to bed. And I'm not sure if we still have it, but it's on a napkin, basically drawn up, and that was in, what was that, Stefan? 2001.
2001. Yeah.
Yeah, November 8, 2001.
Yeah. So, I still have the napkin, of course.
Oh, good. Yeah, you need to keep memorabilia like that for sure.
But back in the day, it was not like Skype. I think Skype wasn't even around back then, but I'm not sure if it was. And so that, sure, the progress of technology sure helped us to stay in touch and write like on the opposite
without
sides.
Skype.
Of the, yeah.
Yeah, without Skype, there would be no Chicken Wings the way it is now, because we did. We made very little progress in the beginning because there was no. Yeah.
Well, since we're talking about the creative process, do you create in English and then translate into Deutsch, or are you thinking in Deutsch and then translating it into English?
Speaking for myself, on Mike speaking here, is like for me, all of this is in English, because I learned most of all my helicopter flying, I learned in English. And I have a hard time even translating this into German, because I don't know any of the expressions, really.
I do the translations into German, and I'm having a hard time too, because it's you have to translate all the technical terms and the radio talk, and then some, you know, word plays and puns, and then you have to fit all that into the speech bubbles. And in German, everything is twice as long. So, you
know. So there's the. I can envision a couple of things taking place here. There's the concept, the writing, doing the artwork. How do you guys divide up the tasks involved?
The writing is most of the time it's the easy part. The idea is the easiest part because, I mean, look at what we talked about. They're blimps, tankers, and Russian AI. So as long as we got all these things happening in aviation, the idea part is the easiest part. And then we write down a punchline or just an idea, and then we Skype about it. And usually it goes, you know, hey, I got this punchline. Chuck will say this at the end. I think it's hilarious, but we need to build up. Well, how do we get to this? Because it's a certain setup, right? And most of our stuff is now tailored to a three-panel comic strip. So there's always, you know, the setup and then the punchline at the end. Hopefully we get a little bit of a half punchline in the beginning or something that's already funny in the first panel. But if not, you get that setup, one, two, three. And so sometimes we have the whole thing, or if I only have part of it, you know.
Yeah, it's like trying to one-up each other with puns in slow motion over chat.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, God, Chuck with a DJI Phantom in his 172. Oh, geez.
Yeah. So it sounds like it's a highly collaborative effort, right? It's not a situation where one of you develops it, writes it, and the other one does the artwork. It sounds like it's kind of collaborative throughout that process.
Well, I do the artwork, but everything else is split up.
The artwork is all in. Yep.
So, Mike, do you ever take a look at Stefan's artwork and make some strong suggestions, or does he nail it every time?
I wouldn't dare. But you know what's funny, though? When I come up with a strip, and we talk about this a lot, I have, in my mind, I have a certain way that's supposed to look. You know, Chuck is on the right side, talks to Julio, and the plane is on the left side. And my brother almost 95% of the time draws it the exact mirror image of what was in my head. It's still the same comic, but if in my head is the plane's flying from right to left, he will draw it flying left to right. And I don't know why that is. But maybe it's because we're perfect two halves that make this thing work.
Maybe. Now, one of you isn't right-handed and the other one left-handed, I take it.
No.
Okay, because that would be a great explanation for the flipping.
Yeah. We still don't know why that is. It's kind of funny.
Now, if our listeners wanted to read Chicken Wing, I know you're published on your website once a week and in EAA Sport Aviation. Where else are you published?
Oh, we're everywhere. So we're in Trader Plane. If you want to read us three times a week or three times a month, we're in Trader Plane. We're on the website. We're on EAA. Vertical Magazine doesn't have us all the time, but usually for their special editions and the helicopter shows, we do something with Vertical Magazine. And then we're in a lot of countries over in Europe. So in
Germany, UK, Italy, Norway, France. It's, yeah.
Finland.
Hey, Max, they're being overly modest because in Germany they're in Der Fliegel magazine, which is the German equivalent of flying. They're in Aero Market, which is the German equivalent of Trade a Plane. They're in Flugzeug Classic, which is a historical aviation magazine. In the UK, they're in Pilots magazine, which is kind of sort of the UK's version of Plane and Pilot. In Italy, they're in JP4, which is a I've seen one copy of that. That's more of a jet magazine. And then Norway, I can't even pronounce it.
Flynet.
And in France, they're in Air Contact. So there's some, you know, these guys are published.
Yeah, that's clear. It's pretty impressive. And it also speaks to the, sort of the international aspects of aviation and the, you know, international aspects of aviation humor, right. which is great. It's really fantastic. Are you ever involved in doing any commissions? Do people ever come to you and say, you know, you want a special cartoon just for that group or organization or something like that?
Yeah. Sometimes, not a lot. It's more like of a not a big part of our thing, but we've done, you know, people request us like a special thank you strip for their flight instructor or stuff like that. Or sometimes magazines, they have a special idea they want to, like, for their anniversary, you know. It happens, but we're always open for it's not a big thing, but I'm always open for commissions. Hint, hint.
Yeah. Hey, Stefan?
Yep.
Have you ever had a cartoon that was so U.S.-based that you decided you couldn't run it in your European magazines or vice versa? A European-based idea that just wouldn't play in America?
Yeah, we did. It's not, I mean, usually you can use them on both sides of the Atlantic, but we don't use every strip for the magazines because, like most magazines, they publish only once a month. So we produce way more than that. So we can pick and choose anyway. But for the fourth book, we translated into German. That was tough because I couldn't skip any strips. So I had to translate them all. And some of them are really, really hard because they don't translate language-wise or culture-wise. It's not that big of a problem because everybody in Europe watches American TV shows and knows about aviation in the States. So,
okay. Have you ever been, I want to say, editorially or legally censored where an editor went, no, 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 we're not going to make fun of that? Or your lawyers went, no, 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 don't make fun of that. You're
Well, we're currently still in litigation, so we can't speak to that. I'm just kidding. Now, it's funny. What surprised us is actually, for example, like Julio, the mechanic, hates Cessna Skymasters, and that's because I as a mechanic, I didn't like Cessna Skymasters. They're a beautiful plane, and they fly nice, and I know people love them, but as a mechanic, they were a nightmare. And so naturally, because I hated them, Julio hates them, and we had, for example, Trader Plane tell us, look, we can't publish this. Cessna is one of our biggest customers. We can't publish a strip where you make fun of the Cessna, like, oh, something we didn't think about. But that's, of course, you know, that's why we have more than one strip a month that we can choose from. But it's kind of those kind of things that come up on regular basis where it's like, yeah, we didn't think about this and we'd be in trouble. It's more of that really than other things because we try to stay clean, and it's kind of a challenge also, you know, be funny and be clean for the most part.
You know, guys, one of the questions that our listeners might have is over copyright. As a publisher of this podcast and others, I'm always very, very sensitive to copyright. sometimes people, you know, cross the line when they shouldn't. But you will frequently see some Chicken Wings comics show up in a forum or someone's blog post or elsewhere or even just shared across amongst friends. What's your policy on, I'll call it, fair use of the work that you do?
Well, first of all, imagine trademarking a product that's called chicken wings. That's a basic food staple in the American diet. So we spend a lot of time and effort getting that done, even pushed through. But the way we look at copyright is it's advertisement for us. I mean,
our rule of thumb is as long as you don't make money off it, we're fine. So if you spread it around, yeah.
Exactly. And if you use your, give you, this is, tell them that's your character, so this is your joke. And even jokes, you know, sometimes a lot, we're talking worldwide, some people come up with the same idea. We've accidentally done jokes where somebody said, well, this is just like this Gary Larson joke or whatever, and that was totally not us trying to make the same. Just eventually, sometimes worldwide, people may come up with the same joke. So we look at it, we don't go after people because it's free advertisement, and the more people show us around, I think the better it is for us in the long run.
Sure.
Yeah. But it's actually really funny. I met like this pilot acquaintance of mine, and he told me a long story about how he went all the way to Alaska from Austria, and he loves flying in Alaska, and he went from here to there and way back, and then finally at the very farthest out airport he could find, he went into the FBO, and they had a Chicken Wings comic strip on the wall. So those are the, yeah, we really love our work being shared and displayed everywhere.
And then, if I may plug that in real quick, if you have people that we fighting for keeping airports open and you know, airstrips, a lot of these small airports get shut down and noise complaints. So we like, you know, we even give out our stuff for free to these groups that are fighting to you know, for young kids into aviation and then for these airports to stay open. So that's, I'm not surprised there's a lot of our material out. What I think is funny is that almost every FPO I go into with my day job is everybody has a different comic strip on when I see these posted somewhere in the FPO. So that makes you feel really nice that it's just not one comic that everybody loves and then the rest falls on the wayside. Everybody has a different one that they love the most. So.
You don't sneak up and sign it? When you see it there, pull out your pen and just autograph it?
I actually do sometimes. Yeah, I do.
Yeah, that's cool. That's very cool.
Or I add another one or I change it out so when they're not looking, see if they notice. Yeah.
Well, that brings up an interesting point, Mike. Since you fly, is there a chicken wing nose art on your helicopter? If not, why not? Defend your answer.
Let me think about this. there is not one on my helicopter, but there is one on the if you look very close at the Red Bull helicopter that Chuck Aaron used to fly, he had a little Chuck that says Captain Chuck on the side of his helicopter. And we have had other drawings that my brother drew on helicopters I've flown, and we're currently working on a parrot type helicopter drawing on the current helicopter, but not.
Parrot.
Trick question. Yeah, I don't own a helicopter, so I don't get to
call. Yeah. Have you ever thought about animating your characters?
Yes. We're actually in the middle of doing this because animation or video and media is online media is the way to go. So it's been a dream for many, many years. I think it's even been a dream before we even started the first comics, because we had all this situation that we're talking about that would be great being animated. So we are working on that. We're going it alone. This not alone, but we're trying to maybe do a crowdfunding page, which you can now click on our website and get information on what we're doing, what we're up to, and where we're at with this whole thing. And we're hoping to have our first animated short debut at the Arrow show this when is it, April, right?
Yeah. Talk about pressure.
So we're a little bit on pressure. We're setting ourselves deadlines, driving ourselves crazy with this, but hopefully, depending on how much feedback we get and what the crowds think of this, that'd be our dream to actually do this animated and pass around little shorts on YouTube.
Yeah.
And see where it leads to.
We've been thinking about it since day one, actually. Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
I've got to imagine that's like a whole nother level of effort.
Yeah, a lot of things had to come together, and we got close a couple of times with the animation project, but you know, the technology to animate something was it was only reserved for the big guys, right? So and then trying to get the big guys interested, you couldn't just put something out yourself. But now, you know, the programs have not just evolved, but mainly they got cheaper for the little guy. Stefan has learned a few things, so
and also you don't really need any big networks anymore to distribute. You just put it on YouTube or somewhere. And the only question is how to monetize it. And we don't really want advertisements. We recently just removed almost all advertisements from our page because it just sucks.
But they're everywhere, yeah.
Yeah. So that's why we're thinking about the crowdfunding thing. Yeah. And we started a Patreon page where you can subscribe, you know, donate a certain amount of money a month, and then you get some perks like early access or, depending on the level, free books, and you know, and with that, if we get a certain level, we can hopefully put out like regular animations.
Yeah,
we'll see.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's exciting. It's
a lot of work.
Yeah, it is.
So if you're looking to support us, check out our website. Right underneath the strip, there's a button that says support us, and see what's all up there. There's gonna be free content. There's a little bit of where you can just donate just a little bit, and you can finance the whole thing if you choose to do so. The more money we get, the more we can wrestle Steff away from making a living and doing animation and revolutionize the aviation industry worldwide.
There you go. Amazing.
Hey, Stefan, since you're premiering this at Arrow a week after Sun and Fun, darn, I won't be able to go. Since you're premiering this at Arrow, are you going to do it in Deutsch or are you going to do it in English?
No, English. Yeah.
English is the aviation language, yeah.
It is. So I was just curious, since you're doing it, you're premiering it at a German air show, how goes the search for voice talent?
Well, we're still searching, but we've got a couple of plans. So that's...
We got some inner... Well, how do you say
that? That's actually one of the hardest parts, because like a lot of the big famous animated shows like Family Guy or South Park, they started on with their own voices, you know, and we can't, I mean, maybe I can do Hans, you know, because he has a German accent, but I can voice my own characters. So we have to find people, but we always already stretched out our tentacles to
grab talent.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Wow. What a project. That's pretty impressive. That's really impressive.
Yeah, we have a certain voice in our head, so it's gonna be the toughest, I think. And I'll say this, I haven't not animated anything, but I was gonna say animation is the easiest part. maybe I'll let Stefan answer that, but yeah.
Yeah.
Voice is,
Hey Jackson, how's your chicken?
Yeah. Can you sound like a chicken? So Launchpad, you know, this is fun stuff. There ought to be something that we could do to kind of engage our listeners with chicken wings.
Oh, there is. He talked about books. They've published 6 books. And what we're going to do is we have a brilliant idea. Mike and Stefan came up with a great idea. Is these guys, out of the goodness of their heart, have donated not one, but 2 sets of books, of their 2 latest books, Chicken Wing 5, which was, I got it right behind me.
Turning Crosswind,
and book 6, Check 6. And all you have to do to be eligible is go to the Chicken Wings website, and we'll put a link in the show notes, is go to the website and email us your favorite chicken wing comic. Send it to thegeeks@airplanegeeks.com. And then we'll pick 2 lucky winners. And we'll mail you your books. And these aren't just books. These have been autographed by both Mike and Stefan to Airplane Geeks listeners. And we're opening this contest up not just to the U.S., but planet-wide.
Planet-wide.
Planet-wide. Nice.
Nice, yeah.
So be sure to get your email to us by February 22nd, 2019. And again, send that to thegeeks@airplanegeeks.com. Use the subject line chicken wings, so we're sure to find it. And again, tell us what your favorite Chicken Wings cartoon is. The website, again, is chickenwingscomics.com. But like Launchpad says, we'll have that link in the show notes too. And we'll draw 2 winners randomly from all of the eligible emails. And we'll announce the 2 winners on what should be episode 541. That's the episode for last week in February, I guess.
And again, Dave, but yet another contest that you are ineligible for.
Oh, that's okay. Because way back in the day in 2012 at Oshkosh, I got a signed copy from the 2 of them, from one of the, I guess it was the first and second copies when I met you guys out at Oshkosh. You guys are there every year. So I don't need an autographed copy from the gentleman. I have them already, Lunchpad.
Oh, okay.
All right. Good. So we're going to move on. A few other things we need to do for this episode. We want to thank Stefan and Mike, the Strassers. You guys aren't twins, are you? Who's the older brother?
No. Mike.
Mike is the older one?
Yeah.
Yep.
And are there more brothers or do you have sisters as well?
No, just us.
Okay.
Just us.
Just the two of you. Okay. Well, that's probably plenty for one family.
Yeah. Oh, mom had her hands full. So,
I imagine. So, yeah, thanks so much, guys. We really appreciate coming on the show.
Well, thanks for having us. We love your show.
Thank you. We have one shout out. There's an event coming up. This is Bert and Dick Rutan are scheduled to appear together in Dayton, Ohio on February 22nd, 2019. This is the National Aviation Hall of Fame Enshrinees Talk. The two Rutans are going to talk about their aviation achievements, again, February 22nd. So this event is something that you can buy tickets for. There's also, we were talking about autographed copies. There's also some opportunities to get some autographed copies. But there's a reception. They're going to have an evening with the Enshrinees series. They're going to focus primarily on their lives as designers, engineers, and test pilots. And there's going to be an open Q&A that's going to follow their opening presentation. So these two guys, of course, are well known in the aviation industry. Dick Rutan flew 325 missions in Vietnam, but he also completed the nonstop, non-refueled flight around the world in the Voyager. And then in 1997, Dick flew around the world again in two experimental long EX aircraft. And of course, Bert Rutan he's now retired, but was the founder and CEO of Scaled Composites. So these guys are just amazing. We'll have a link in the show notes if you're interested in attending this. It's going to be in Dayton, Ohio, on the 22nd. The website is nationalaviation.org. Look for this in the show notes. This might be a great event to attend. David, this sounds like something that you might be interested in.
Any excuse to go inside the United States Air Force Museum? Absolutely.
Well, there is that as well.
That is where the National Hall of Fame is. It's located inside of the National Museum of the United States Air Force. But I don't think I'll be able to make it because I won't be back yet from Hawaii.
Oh, that's true. Well, I'll let you know a little secret. I bought my ticket today.
You need to go.
I'm going.
I'm envious because if it's a cool-looking airplane, Bert Rutan designed it.
Yes.
And if it's a cool-looking spaceship, Bert Rutan designed it.
Well, I was talking with one of the organizers earlier today, actually, who remarked that both Bert and Dick Rutan individually are pretty funny, entertaining guys. And you put the two of them together, and who knows what might happen. So it's going to be a great event. There are tickets at different levels. You can just simply attend at one ticket price, or there are increasing levels where you get increasing amounts of signed, autographed books and other items. So you can kind of price it to the degree you like and get as much interesting stuff to take home as you want as well. Check it out. This might be a great one. One piece of listener mail just from Lyman. Last week, Launchpad was talking about Snarge. And Launchpad, one of the things you asked, I think, was what's the equivalent for drones, right? Snarge applies to birds, and snarge is the remnants after a bird.
Exactly. The feathers, blood, and guts. And what's the equivalent for when a drone hits? Although I do like Max Trescott's drone detritus.
Yeah. Well, we heard from one of our listeners, Lyman. And he said maybe what you do is you mail the residual fragmentos or shardage for forensic analysis to the, get this, the drone yard. I thought that was pretty good.
I like snardage, or what did he call it? What was the?
Shardage.
Shardage. That has potential. I like that word.
Yeah, yeah. And send it to the drone yard for analysis. All right, very good. All right. Well, I think I thought we had more, but I guess we don't. Well, we want to thank you for listening to the Airplane Geeks podcast. We especially want to thank all of our guests. And boy, we had three this episode: Stefan and Mike Strasser, chickenwingscomics.com. Stefan's gone to bed because, well, it's very late. Mike's still with us. Again, Mike, thanks so much for you and your brother coming on the show and giving us a little more insight into the hysterics that is Chicken Wings Comics.
Thanks for having us. As you may have found out, we like to talk. So,
well, and you like to create some really funny some funny comics, too. So that's good. And again, it's easy, chickenwingscomics.com. And don't forget our giveaway contest. We really want to thank you and Steph and Mike for making those autographed books available for our listeners. That's wonderful.
Yeah, thanks, guys. That's really a big plus to the listeners.
Well, thanks.
And we also want to thank Jackson for coming on the show. Jackson, thanks again. We really appreciate it. And it's been fun to have you on.
Thanks, guys.
And Jackson, next time you get to go fly at the United, ask if you can take your good friend Launchpad with you.
Nice.
Yeah, yeah. So Jackson becomes the, I'm pretty sure, David will tell me if I'm wrong because he's got a better memory than I do. But I believe Jackson then becomes the youngest guest we've had on the show. Is that right, David?
Yep, he is. So, Jackson, what did you think of being on your first podcast?
It was pretty fun.
Good. Do you know who the oldest guest was we've ever had on the podcast?
Oh, that's hard.
It is hard. Anybody?
Rob Mark?
Yeah, no, yes. Well, he was a guest before he was a host. Nope, older than Rob.
Oh, man. That'd be like the Wright brothers.
No.
I don't know.
Max, is it who I think it was?
Curtis?
No, I'm pretty sure at 90 years old, it was Dr. Alfred Kahn, who is also known as the father of airline deregulation in the United States. I'm pretty sure he's the oldest guest we've had. So if that's true, then we've spanned from 10 years old to 90 years old. Pretty impressive.
Yeah.
Gee, don't sound so excited, Jackson. Show some enthusiasm there.
You guys want to come over here? You're going to have to drive all the way up to Denver if you want to fly the United thing, though, launch pad.
Don't, I can make
Jackson,
sacrifice.
Don't do that. There. Don't say that because he'll show up. You don't want that.
Yeah. All right. Well, look, let's tell everybody where they can find us online, and we'll start with David Vanderhoof. Tell our listeners where they can find you.
Well, the first place you should find me is becoming part of our Slack listener team, and you can do that by sending us an email to thegeeks@airplanegeeks.com, and you can join the fun and all of the conversations on our Slack team. The second place you can find me is on Twitter, or LinkedIn. I would prefer you find me on LinkedIn so I can give you my resume. You can find me on both of those if you can spell Vanderhoof. And last but not least, you can find me on the UAV Digest with that guy, Max Flight. And that comes out on Monday mornings.
No, it doesn't.
Comes out on Friday mornings. Why did I say Monday mornings?
I don't know. It's been a long day. In Launchpad Marzari, how do folks find more Launchpad?
Well, when I'm not sitting on the chicken wing site waiting for next week's comic, I'm at Facebook at Launchpad Marzari, or at Launchpad, and then I hang out, being a real slacker, I hang out on our Slack team. I'm on Twitter as Pilot Launchpad, but I'm not a very good tweeter. So that's where I'm at.
Okay. And let's see, Jackson, you're probably too young to be online anywhere, right? You're not on Twitter or anything like that, are you?
No.
Yeah, that's good. Stay away.
Good boy. Stay away from that stuff.
Yeah, yeah. There'll be plenty of time for that in the future. And of course, I'm Max Flight. You can find me on LinkedIn, as David said, at theuavdigest.com each week. Also, monthly with Mary Kirby on the PAXX podcast. That's at PAXXpodcast.com. We talk about the passenger experience. If you want to send me an email, that's maxflight@airplanegeeks.com. Hang out on the listener team, the Slack team. And we invite you, as David said, to take a look at that. Just send us an email. We'll send you an invite. Our outro is by Bruno Massone. As always, you can find his compositions that incorporate aviation sounds at brunomassone.com. So please join us again next week as we talk aviation on the Airplane Geeks podcast. Bye, everybody.
Frequency change approved.
Goodbye, everyone.
And thanks for listening.
Ladies and gentlemen, in a few moments we shall be landing. Kindly observe the no smoking sign and ensure that your seatbelts are securely fastened and that your seatbelts are in an upright position. Thank you.
Good.
What? What are you doing? I just thought. Okay. Yeah.
Jackson, was that your grandmother?
Yep.
Does she have any idea what you're doing?
Oh yeah.
Okay.
I told her.
Okay.
Just talking with strangers on the internet. Don't worry about it.